Oh, we don't have a waffle.
Anyway.
We should talk about a waffle. Hi, everyone. This is our waffle. This is our waffle. Welcome back to What the History. We'll do the proper intro in a bit. But yes, we finally made it back to for you lovely What the Historians so that we can actually share some more What the History with you. So, yay!
Yes, that's right. We're really sorry it's taken so long. Well, I know I am. Not sure about you. And much love to our friends and family around the world who are still in lockdown and are not happy right this time. And much love to my friends and family on the mid-north coast of New South Wales.
Indeed. Don't tap the desk.
Sorry. I will not tap the desk. But yeah.
Something's never changed.
Well, there's things here in my ring. Is my ring on my finger, by the way, people. Sick, dirty little people. That's why I like you.
I've got to put the microphone somewhere.
It just keeps tapping on the mouth.
How about we pop in a theme tune?
Let's pop in the theme tune!
We can do this thing.
First time for 2021.
Yay!
What the
history, 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 history.
Hello and welcome back to What the History, your every now and then podcast.
We're trying to make it fortnightly again.
With bizarre bits of history to make you say what the history. I am Trevor Holland.
And I am Susie Holland, who obviously thinks everything is quite funny at this point in time with our podcast.
Well, we are meant to have a laugh.
We are. Oh, God.
Except for the serious ones.
Yes.
Yes. But I don't think this is a serious one.
No, it's kind of serious. It's a bit of both. It's a bit of laughter, a bit of tears, a bit of Greek gods.
Yeah.
A bit of green stuff, really.
Indeed. Well,
the green.
What are you talking about?
Greens? And it's not the green foldy stuff. It's just another green.
Well, what we're talking about, the green stuff, how about you start with your awesome bit of What the History?
All right. Okay. Now, I first saw this next subject for my What the History on a show called Would You Believe It on Amazon Prime, because I have binge watched so much for obvious reasons. And at first I thought this part of it was a bit of a joke, but it really wasn't. And it's obviously perfect for What the History. So I'm going to tell you all about the humble artichoke. Yes, the humble artichoke. And when it was used as a symbol of war. But first, a little history. The artichoke has had, shall we say, a bit of a prickly up and down love affair with foodies of the world. The globe artichoke is actually a member of the thistle family, and its botanical name is Cynara cardalonculus var socolimus. Socolimus! That's great. A vegetable from the Mediterranean region. Greek legend has it, Zeus was on his way to see his brother Poseidon and saw a gorgeous maiden named Cynara from the island of Zanari. Zeus became smitten and after seducing her, asked her to be his mistress and to also become a goddess. Yeah, okay.
As you do.
Cynara initially agreed but became homesick for her family and snuck back to Earth. When she came back, Zeus got so upset that he hurled her back to Earth, transforming her into the humble artichoke. According to Greek naturalist and philosopher Theophrastus, 371 to 287 BC, the artichoke was grown in Sicily and Italy, and ancient Greeks and Romans believed the plant was an aphrodisiac and successful in the conception of boys. In 77 AD, Pliny the Elder, Roman naturalist, called the poor artichoke one of the monstrosities of the world. And that was a quote. But he and his mates continued nomming on the plant, and wealthy Romans would prepare artichokes in honey and vinegar seasoned with cumin.
That doesn't sound too bad.
No, it actually sounds quite nice. 800 AD saw North African Moors begin growing the artichoke in Granada in Spain, while Saracens grew them in Italy. Obviously, because they're still grown in Italy. Mid-15th century saw the artichokes being grown in Naples. Rome fell, and with it, the humble artichoke fell in popularity. In the 16th century, Catherine de' Medici is said to have brought the artichoke from Italy to France when she married the French King Henry II, and the artichoke rose in popularity again. The artichoke then travelled in the 1800s when French immigrants migrated to the United States of America and settled in the Louisiana Territory. There, the first artichoke fields were grown, but by 1940 they had gone. However, in the late 1800s, Spanish people migrated to California, settling in the Monterey area. California still provides 99% of America's artichokes, mostly from this area. Around the turn of the century, Italians began to migrate to the USA, and while artichokes were grown on a small scale with historically George Washington and Thomas Jefferson growing and eating them, they were never grown on a large scale. That changed in 1922 when Monterey County landowner Andrew Malera leased his land to Italian farmers to see if artichokes could be grown on a commercial scale. Andrew formerly grew sugar beets there and thought he could make more money from the artichokes than what the sugar company was paying him for the beets. And as artichokes were currently being sold for 30 to 40 cents each at the time, rather large amount, his gamble paid off and he was earning three times the amount of money. There was a definite market as Italians missed artichokes from the old country, and as demand grew, artichokes were noticed by another faction, the Mafia. In the 1920s, Ciro Whitey Terranova, an Italian-born New York City gangster and underboss of the Morello crime family, became known as the Artichoke King when he bought all the artichokes shipped from California to New York for $6 a crate, thereby cornering the monopoly on the much-loved vegetable. To stop others attempting to buy artichokes, he and his mafia cohorts terrorized anyone who wanted to buy or produce them. Ciro then created a produce company and resold the artichokes for 30 to 40% profit, frightening vendors into submission to sell the now price-inflated artichokes to Italians. That is really, really not great. Not content with just creating the monopoly, Ciro had his cohorts also hack the artichoke plants with machetes of competing farms in California. They also stripped buds off the plants and carjacked trucks carrying artichokes. To stop the nightly raids by the mafia henchmen, the sheriff of San Mateo County created groups of men with sawn-off rifles to patrol the back roads and farms. Invariably, fights broke out, and on the 25th of November 1931, the henchmen got away with a truck carrying crates of artichokes. The mafia won at this time, with farmers being intimidated into silence. This decreased supply increased the demand, equaling a higher profit for the mafia. In 1935, the mayor of New York City had had enough. On the morning of the 21st of December 1935, Mayor Ferrello LaGuardia stood on the back of a flat-top truck in the Bronx Terminal Market, unrolled a scroll, and read that there was, and I quote, a serious and threatening, end quote, that was threatening the artichokes and placed a ban on sale, display, and possession of the vegetable. LaGuardia followed this up, and again I quote, I want it clearly understood that no thugs, racketeers, or punks are going to be allowed to intimidate you as long as I am mayor of the city of New York, end quote. The artichoke wars had begun. The next day, newspaper New York Tribune wrote and mocked LaGuardia for his, and I quote, protection of the virtue of artichokes. It is impossible not to conclude the world today is a bit mad, end quote. LaGuardia expressly banned the sale of baby artichokes grown from the same plant, but from the bottom as the larger leaves above inhibit growth, and prided himself in cleaning up the markets and getting rid of unsanitary areas and crime in the cart districts where vendors sold produce on carts, creating the more modernized wholesale market at the Bronx Terminal Market. As LaGuardia told the market vendors, and I quote, I found you pushcart peddlers. I have made you merchants. Ciro and his mafia gang threatened all LaGuardia had worked for. The tactic worked, with the mafia surrendering to LaGuardia, and after a week the artichoke wars were over. only lasted a week. Mm. The market was open to legitimate market vendors. Prices decreased and sales increased. Newspapers printed recipes using artichokes and all was well again.
Hooray!
Yay! LaGuardia's triumph over the mafia was a win for the now not so humble artichoke and for all those who love to eat them, including LaGuardia himself, who liked his artichokes with mayonnaise. In 1947, the artichoke got a further boost by a young actress who was crowned the first Castroville, that's a part of California, the first Castroville artichoke queen, and her name was Marilyn Monroe.
Ooh.
What the history.
What the history indeed. I mean, when you think of mafia, you don't think of artichokes, do you?
No, you think of all the other things the mafia was involved in.
Mm. Cigarettes, alcohol.
Yeah, prostitution, racketeering.
Pinball.
Pinball. Yes, that's a bit of a throwback to one of our first podcasts.
Throwback, yes.
Yeah, one of our first podcasts we ever did.
Spring Heel Jack and Spring Loaded Vice episode.
Oh, that was a really good episode.
Yeah.
That was great. Yeah, but getting back to this one. Oh, you went off and I cut you down.
Yeah, you did. I just thought,
this is what usually happens, the opposite. Usually yeah. I go off on tangents. Trev goes, no, you need to come back.
Like you're doing right now.
See? I'm just giving our beautiful listeners context.
Or Patreons if I decide to keep this bin in.
Oh.
Or not keep it in. I don't know yet.
Oh, lucky them. They're gonna love that.
As you can tell. Lots of editing is required.
Lots of editing. I haven't done this for a little while.
No.
Anyway, we'll get back to this one here. You know, you don't think of artichokes as being on the mafia hit list, but it makes perfect sense.
Mm.
There was a market. They saw a bit of a loophole. They exploited that loophole. And they did what they could to make sure all of the money was theirs.
Absolutely.
Which is pretty much a mafia tactic.
Indeed.
Don't come after me, guys.
No.
I'm good.
That's okay. I think we're fine. I think we're pretty safe in the mafia. They're not cornering the podcast market yet. They're not cornering the market on rare books either.
Oh, my God. What a beautiful segue.
I would have been reaching for a segue this entire time.
Oh. Bravo. So, Bravo, that was beautiful. Okay, let's have it.
Well, I'll probably start with a message of a not-so-rare book, but here we go. There is a passage I find quite amusing in one of my favourite novels, Good Omens, by Terry Pratchett and Neil Gaiman. Incidentally, I've had the pleasure of meeting both of these talented gents, and both have signed my copy. Rag over. The section of this fine novel I'm referring to happens quite early on and doesn't have much to do with the overall plot, but I'll pop in a minor spoiler warning here anyway. So, minor spoiler warning. Here we go. I was quite tickled by the description of the Angel Aziraphale's book collection, particularly, and allow me to paraphrase, he had a complete set of the infamous Bibles, individually named from errors in typesetting. These Bibles included the Unrighteous Bible, the Wicked Bible, the Discharge Bible, the Treacle Bible, the Standing Fishes Bible, the Charing Cross Bible, and the rest. End quote. So when I discovered that this list does refer to a number of Bibles that really exist, I was particularly surprised and very delighted. Now let us delve into our own collection of What the History literary errata together. We'll start with the Owl Husband Bible. Printed in 1944, this one improved on what I feel is one of the more misogynistic instructions in the King James Bible about how wives should behave through a typo in the word own, leading to the memorable quote, "Wives, in the same way submit yourselves to your owl husbands." In 1612... In 1612, an edition was printed that could be considered an indictment on the typesetter's employer. The word princes was replaced with printers, leading to printers have persecuted me, taking pride of place. A bit of a darker take on the good book came off the press in 1801, a misprint of murmurers led to the line, "These are murderers," and later doubled down with, "Let the children first be killed," when it should have been, "Let the children first be filled." This particular nasty edition has become known as the Murderer's Bible.
It's nasty.
Yeah, if that one left a bit of a bad taste in your mouth, don't try to rinse it out with the Vinegar Bible, where the heading for the parable of the vineyard becomes the parable of the vinegar. Oh, boy. It's also nice to know that the children got their own ferocious misprint in 1804, where a slight transposition of loins becomes "Thy son that shall come forth out of thy lions." Now, there have also been a few misprints that technically make life a bit more wild for parishioners, and funny enough, they are all versions of the King James Bible. In 1716, the Sinner's Bible hit the shelves with a very particular and easily made typo. The word "no" was reversed in Jeremiah 31:34, urging readers to sin on more.
Yes!
Woohoo! Corinthians 6:9 also gave the less savory a bit of hope in 1653 with the omission of the word "not," leading to the statement, "Know ye that the unrighteous shall inherit the kingdom of God." And yes, this one is known as the Unrighteous Bible. This is... This is not a complete list, by the way, and I've decided to leave the most famous for last. The edition of the King James Bible printed in 1631 had an error that led to King Charles I demanding that every copy of the edition be retrieved and burned. Out of the thousands that were distributed, it is believed about 11 copies of the Wicked Bible remain in existence. This version also had the word "not" missing in a crucial occasion. The seventh commandment, yep, one of the big rules of the Bible, was printed as "Thou shalt commit adultery." The naughty error also saw the printer fined an amount that would be around $400 today. There was another cheeky error that snuck into the same edition. The word "greatness" being changed gave Deuteronomy 5:24 a very different meaning. "And ye said, behold, the Lord our God has showed us his glory and his great ass."
It's my favorite.
Oh, sacrilegious. Oh, sacrilegious.
Sacrilegious.
Given the location of the first error and the outrageousness of the second, biblical scholars believe the Wicked Bible may not have been an act of incompetence. Rather, another rival printer is suspected to have sabotaged the print run. No proof, but still, what the history.
I'm inclined to go and have a look at my own Bible now that I received when I was a child to see if my Bibles have those errors.
Unlikely. A lot of them were destroyed, and most of these are pretty rare now. So,
I love my Bible. I got it when I was a child. It's lovely. It's a children's Bible.
So that's our what the history. Bits of bizarre history for this episode.
I love it.
Now,
I want the Wicked Bible.
Oh, the Wicked Bible, it's worth like half of, like, millions and millions of dollars. Funnily enough.
Hey,
yeah.
It's great.
Yeah, if you support our Patreon, we might get enough for it.
Yes.
About a decade or two.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about 50 years.
Yeah.
We'll still be doing this podcast in 50 years.
Where will we be in 50 years?
Okay, I don't subscribe to the items in the Bible, and I am no longer a believer of God. But I still have my Bible.
Yeah, look, we respect everyone's belief.
We do.
Just don't be a dick about it. Anyway, if you want to know more about the What the History we discussed in today's episode, you can check out links to all our references. They're down in the podcast description down below. And you can also head to our homepage, RufusProject.com, where you can find all of our previous episodes along with all the links to all their references as well. There is a lot of What the History on that page.
Stacks, absolute stacks of beautiful history that just you just scratch your head at and just go, did they really do that?
They did.
And did they really have artichoke wars? Yes, they did. And typesetting in the early printing. I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. It's just
also. You can give us a hand.
Sit on more.
In bringing more of this awesome stuff to you by supporting us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/TheRufusProject. Hang on, no, patreon.com/RufusProject. And you can also get in touch with us again by heading to RufusProject.com. And there's plenty of ways to link to us. You can find What the History on Facebook. You can find What the History on Instagram. And yeah.
Absolutely.
We hope you have enjoyed. We will be back as soon as we can with more awesome content, and we'll get some more awesome content up on the Patreon page for exclusive Patreon supporters. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And yeah, so we shall return in the nearest future.
I'm hoping 2 weeks.
In the nearest future.
I'm hoping. Really. Because we need to get back onto this, because this is our thing. This is our thing.
Yep. We will be back with two more bizarre bits of history to make you say,
What the history? Bye, everyone.
Farewell.